Well, I'd like for you to think back to high school. And I'd like for you to think of that first crush that you had on someone. Maybe it was earlier, but high school was when I was, you know, really starting to pay attention to boys. And back in my day, we had these notebooks that were called Peachies, P-E-E-C-H-E-E. They were folder kind of things you could write on them, and girls would scribble, you know, just all kinds of stuff on them. And when it was very common, when you had a crush on somebody, you'd see this Mrs. John Smith, you know, an elaborate cursive, you know, it was amazing. and the girls would have gotten very carried away with this, what it would be like, you know, to be married, to be Mrs. John Smith. And maybe John Smith didn't even know that she liked him, you know. It didn't matter. I had a friend who complained that when he had been divorced, so this was like midlife, and he complained that sometimes when he would go out with a woman for the second time, all of a sudden she has decided it's serious. And so she starts acting like, I think he loves me, starts talking about China patterns, you know. I mean, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but makes it mean something that it really isn't necessarily. Now, everybody likes a good story, but do we really realize how often we are making up stories? Big time, we are. It is almost addictive. It's certainly habitual. It is so ingrained, I guess, in us that we almost don't realize that we're doing it. We are so accustomed to making things up that we come to conclusions, we make decisions, we do all of that based on these assumptions that we've made about what's happening, or about what, you know, what somebody often will think that we know what someone else is thinking. We think we know what they're going to say. We think we know how they're going to act. We even predict what they're going to do. Make all these assumptions, and we decide then that the other person, if you're in a relationship or a friendship or whatever, often we think that the other person should know what we're thinking and what we're going to say, what we're going to do, what we want. How many times I've done it myself. Well, if he loved me, he would know that I want ABC. If you ask, did you ever tell him you want ABC? Well, no, but he should know that. We make stuff up all the time. There was a movie made in 1980 called Ordinary People. Do you remember it? Powerful, powerful movie. And I think it is a wonderful illustration of what making assumptions can do and can mean, and how damaging it can really be. The movie is about ordinary people, just things that happen to all of us. When the story begins, there are actually four main characters. There's a father and a mother and a son named Conrad. And the other fourth character is a psychiatrist that comes in a little later. And the story begins with a tragedy that has happened. So we come and we begin to see these ordinary people in this life situation after this tragedy. One of the tragedies is that the elder son has been killed. He died in a boating accident, if I recall. And then in the aftermath of all of that, the second son, Conrad, has tried to commit suicide. So we open to this situation then where the family is trying to get a grip on and to deal with what has happened. What we see when we begin to watch the movie. Mary Tyler Moore played the mother, if you remember. She did an excellent job. She came across as cold and almost stone-like. She was so focused on trying to look normal and move on, you know. But she was very detached and cold. The father was, what we saw was just sort of confused. He kind of seemed to bounce between his wife and his son. There was a lot of frustration and confusion for him. And Conrad, we saw right away, the young boy, we saw him, he was obviously wounded, he was withdrawn. It even says something like he believed that he shouldn't even be there. You know, the world would be a better place if he wasn't there, which is very typical if someone is considering suicide. That's what they think. And yet, they don't talk to each other. So they're making all these assumptions about what the other ones are thinking and feeling and doing based on what they're seeing and their own inner experience, of course. Conrad believes that he's at fault for the accident. And so what he thinks then, or what he projects, is that because his mother, when he sees his mother being so withdrawn and aloof from him, that he believes, he makes the assumption, that she also thinks it's his fault and that doesn't love him anymore. That's what he made that mean. It's harder to tell what Mary Tyler Moore is, or her character is thinking, feeling. She is so closed off emotionally. It's, you know, she's just, you just see her trying to make life normal again. You know, I remember a segment where she and her husband have gone to play golf with another couple, and she's really trying hard to be like it was before. And yet, if you've lost a child, it can never be like it was before. But you don't really get a sense of her except for this, just want to move on, and one of the songs, Stuffing It, you know, just trying to ignore what's inside. The father bounces between trying to connect with the mother again, Mary Tyler Moore. He, you know, they apparently at one time had a good relationship, but he can't reach her. And he, at the same time, he's trying to defend the son, Conrad. You know. So he is, it's sad for him because he's lost one son and he almost lost the second son. He's in a difficult position. All of them are obviously in great emotional pain, and it's, part of it is natural. You can't lose a child, you can't lose a sibling without there being great emotional pain. And yet, they are inflicting more emotional pain on themselves because they're not talking to each other, because of the assumptions that they're making. It's very sad. They're hurting each other. And in our lives, what about those times when there are people that we're trying to tiptoe around? We talked about being real. We're talking about the series in the book, The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And so we want to learn to be authentic. And so we're looking at these four agreements. When we have to tiptoe around someone, there's what is known as a cycle of abuse. When someone is so volatile that you have to watch your words, watch your actions, all of that so carefully to avoid the upset, you know, that could be a cycle of violence kind of thing. You can't be yourself, though, certainly, when that's happening. Authority of a leader. I came up at a time when it really wasn't normal to question or to challenge teachers or any of that sort of thing. So some of us have become accustomed to not doing that, but then you're also not being real. You know, you're stifling your questions. We don't want to challenge authority. And so sometimes we sacrifice our own well-being, our own comfort for others. Sometimes we might think that we don't want to say anything because we don't want to hurt somebody. I have said that, done that. But what that really means is that we're kind of like taking responsibility for someone else's emotional well-being. If I say this, then I might hurt their feelings. So that kind of means I need to screen whatever is presented to this person. You know, we're taking responsibility. Nobody needs to have maybe small children, but we don't need to do that for each other necessarily. we are living in ways that we assume that we have to live in order to get what we want, which is almost always acceptance, at least respect, and hopefully love. Sometimes we, as Ruiz talks about, sometimes we do these things because we think we have to get what we want, but we don't, and we can't be our true selves when that happens. So going back to our story, ordinary people, the fourth main character is the psychiatrist, played by, I think it was Judd Hirsch. And things really start to change when Conrad goes to the psychiatrist. The psychiatrist begins to have Conrad face his feelings, begin to say what those feelings are. And what happens anytime that happens in a therapy situation, when you start working with one person, the ripples from those changes, they're felt throughout the family. And so it did. It affected the family a whole lot, a whole lot. What it highlighted were their unspoken rules. Who knows that their family has unspoken rules? Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And mine is one of theirs too, where you just don't talk about things. You know, we're just not going to talk about that. That was one of theirs. So by Conrad going to the psychiatrist, it begins to shake all that up. It begins to break those rules. And then they don't know how to deal with that. And he also begins to learn to ask for what he wants. I don't know if I'm the only one, but that's not an easy thing to do sometimes, to ask for what you want. But he learns to do that. There was a very sad, touching, poignant place in the service, in the movie, where Conrad decides he's going to hug his mother, and he does awkwardly. He walks over to her. He puts his arms around her and hugs her. And you see her, and her face almost looks like a deer in the headlight. Her eyes get big. She stays stiff, though. She doesn't put her arms around him. She just sort of tolerates it while he does it. So even though he's rebuffed, you know, he didn't get what he wanted. He wanted her love. He didn't get that. But what he did accomplish was he was authentic. He with his actions, he asked for what he wanted, even though he didn't get it. He got to experience authenticity. He got to experience being real. And that feels good. Just like that song, even though the video part of that wasn't as good as I would have liked it, I love the words to that song, real. I think we all want to be real. So Conrad had the opportunity to be authentic in that hug. Stopping the story again, do we know what it feels like to have to pretend to be something we're not? You know what that feels like? It's not necessarily a good feeling. Everybody has to do it occasionally. You know, that's certain situations. Sometimes there's a family member that is, oh my God, I can't believe he just said that. And you just be quiet, you know. But that's, maybe you see him once at Christmas. That's okay, I can do that. But going forward, you know, always what you want to do is you want to be real. Remember when Ruiz saying that we learned to pretend at a very young age? And we do, you know, very, very young. We believe that we have to please in order to be loved. And we become very adept at reading signals. And then we make up what we see. So to break this pattern of stuffing it, of interpreting things sometimes incorrectly, we have to learn to ask questions. We have to begin to have the courage to ask questions. And not only do we have to question the other person, we want to question, if we care about them, we want to know, how are you feeling? What did you think about this? We sincerely want to know what they're thinking and feeling. And then we don't have to guess. We don't have to make up things. We also want to question ourselves. We want to begin to question what I think about something. What have I made up? What story am I telling myself about why this has happened or why that has happened? We question ourselves too. A woman named Byron Katie has been very successful with a process that she describes in a book, Loving What Is, and it's, there are questions, I can't say what they are right now, but it's a very powerful exercise where you begin to question, is this true? That's the only one I remember. We question. By questioning and asking for what we want, we are authentic. So we can get away from making assumptions, making up stories. We ask questions, and we can learn to be real. Back to Conrad. His practice then of asking questions and asking for what he wants is really changing things. We seem to be witnessing the breakup, the destruction of the whole family. Because what we see happening then is, as he begins to question this, it just really brings to light all that isn't right with the family, the relationship. Conrad is healing. His pain isn't being directed inward anymore. So no longer is he asking the world or telling the world that he doesn't need to be there anymore. He is finally beginning to heal. He's stopped that focus. The father is finally beginning to see how the mother is, some of the way they're not communicating. There's a very moving scene in it where Donald Sutherland, I think, played the father, and he was in the dining room, I think, in the house in the middle of the night. The room was dark, and Mary Tyler Moore comes downstairs. She notices that he's not there, and she comes downstairs, and he's crying, and she's talking to him, and he tells her, and I don't remember the words, but he tells her what he wants, and she can't do that. So she turns around and she goes back upstairs. You see her packing. The only break in her veneer that you ever see is, I think she had her brush and she was putting it in a suitcase or something, and she has one sob. And then she pulls it back together again and she goes on packing. That's all you ever see of that. And she leaves. Then we hear a car pulling away, gravel kind of thing. So she's gone. And it seems like, oh, what a sad story. But there's a really bright side to it, because what was there, there was certainly some good there, but it wasn't real. So what is left and what now has a chance to form is real relationship. So you see toward the end of the movie, or the end, the father and the son are sitting on the back steps of the house and they're talking, and it is, they're speaking real. They're being authentic. And so you know that there is something new, something authentic that has come out of it, which is a good thing, even though what we saw before is over. It's done. When we stop making assumptions, making up stories, we can have authentic relationships. And authentic relationships are the foundation of healthy lives. When we are being unreal, when we're being inauthentic or unauthentic, whatever the word is, it's like we have a facade in front of us. And so the love that is coming toward us based on this pretending that we're doing goes to the facade. We might feel a little bit of it, but we don't really feel the love, because behind that facade we're thinking, if they only knew what I really was, they wouldn't love me. We're behind there. We're not getting that. So to have a healthy, strong relationship, whether it's a spousal relationship or a working relationship or any kind of relationship, it needs to be real. It needs to be authentic. We need to learn to have the courage to be real with one another. We must ask questions. and we must ask for what we want. And that doesn't mean that if I ask Vernetta for something, it doesn't mean that she has to give it to me. Asking only means that I need to ask it. And then she needs to answer in an authentic way. She can say yes, no, we'll talk about it. Let's, you know, whatever. It doesn't mean that she has to do it. So by being authentic and asking for what we want isn't a free license to expect that you will get everything you ask for necessarily. The freedom comes from having the courage to ask it in the first place. So I want you to imagine for a moment being with someone, a loved one, and feeling completely loved, completely accepted, just as you are, warts and all. You know? Wouldn't that be amazing? Maybe you already have that. Probably we all have that with one person, two people, we have that. But imagine being that way with all your significant people. Imagine being with coworkers and being real. Imagine feeling accepted and respected for who you are and what you bring. That would feel wonderful. Imagine waking up every morning and feeling comfortable in your own skin because you have been real, because you have been authentic, you have been true to yourself, if you will. It would feel really good, really good. When you do that, when we are authentic, we lay a foundation for being the people we want, for building the relationships and maintaining the relationships that we want, the church that we want, the life that we want. The movie Ordinary People is about ordinary people, people like you and me. We have all experienced tragedy. We've all been through difficult times like that. We can learn to stop making up stories. We can learn to better deal with those challenges by being our real selves. Ruiz says, find the courage to ask questions and to express what you really want. Communicate with others as clearly as you can to avoid misunderstandings, sadness, and drama. Let me read that sentence again. I think it's very important. Communicate with others as clearly as you can to avoid misunderstandings, sadness, and drama. And he goes on, with just this one agreement, you can completely transform your life. And we can learn. Don't make assumptions. God bless you. As we do each week, let's take some time now to practice the presence. So I invite you to get settled in your seat. If you haven't already, let your eyes, outer eyes, gently close. And begin to bring your awareness to this time and this place. This room, the body that you're in. Sometimes to help us in that centering, we purposely take our attention, our awareness, and place it on our breath. So we begin to be aware of the breath as it comes into our bodies, how our bodies feel as we expand, how it feels to release that breath. And we take another breath and notice. We slow that breath. Breathing in, pause, and breathing out. It is in this ability to quiet ourselves, both physically and mentally, that we are better able to once again come into alignment with what Linda Martella Witsit calls our divine identity, to align with that higher self of us, to align with that Christ within. We relax. There is no place we need to be, nothing that we need to be doing. We are here, totally here. We recognize and we can feel that we are safe. We feel and experience a sense of safety, beautiful sense of peace. Peace that fills us completely. In that peace, we find ourselves relaxed, relaxed even more. We are open, receptive, willing. We can listen internally. With open spirits. Nothing needs to happen. We allow. We have a sense of no longer are we choosing our breath or pace of our breath. We have a sense now of allowing the breath to breathe us. And when we are aligned in this way, we are expressions of that Christ. We are one with the Creator, one with each other. We are love. It is at this most deep time of oneness, of connection, that we have a sense of our oneness with each other. We have a sense that we are all doing the best that we can. We all want to be accepted. We all want to be treated with dignity. We all want respect. Everyone in this world wants these universal things. It is in this recognition of our oneness that we might begin to have a sense of curiosity about how others think, about what their lives are like. We might experience a desire to truly know another person better at a deeper level, not just the superficial things. It is at this deep level when we recognize our oneness that we can consider our loved ones and look past the surface differences to know that there is such a bond of love, to realize that we have so much more in common with our loved ones than we have differences, to be grateful for the awareness that we can work through differences. Because we love them, and they love us. And we can recognize that there may be relationships that we're holding on to that aren't mutually supportive, And we can have the courage to let go. We are never alone. When we feel this connection with our higher self, when we feel the connection with other people, we are experiencing God, always present, everywhere present. And so by leaning into the connection, we can always trust that we will be guided to say the right words, that the thoughts will come to us to say, to express, that will be healing, that will be for the highest and best of everybody. We can begin to tap into the wisdom and use it in our own lives. We are grateful for this connection, for this realization. And as we do each week, we take some time to just experience our connection. And so for a few moments now, I suggest that we be silent, that we feel the silence, that we feel the connection in the silence. We come out of these times of connection, of communion, rejuvenated, renewed. Even if we don't feel a lot different, there's something happening at a very deep level. We are making stronger that connection so that when we go forth and out into our lives, it is easier and easier to fall into the alignment once again. To be in the peace, to be in the love as we move through life experiences. And we are grateful. Grateful for this presence in our lives. Grateful for the awareness that it is there. Grateful for all of our blessings. And so as we begin to bring this time to a close, we bring with us this gratitude, and we close this time together by repeating together our Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.